Today is September 23rd, 1981. We're in the office of Kenneth Lynch in Wilton, Connecticut. And Mr. Lynch, why don't you tell us a bit about your association with the Statue of Liberty?
Well, when I was a young man in France learning with Cray, the parade officially is known as a repoussé worker. The word repoussé means emboss. Really means to repulse, to push back. As you knock the metal off, and you push it back into the exact shape you want. Well, the French used to brag that they were the inventors of repoussé work, and the biggest thing ever made repoussé was the Statue of Liberty. Well, of course, like any other youngster, I ran around to look at that place where all this was done, and it's still standing just the same way. And in the meantime, I did a hitch in the army. I had one of my shepherds off my, I was a horseshoer, and I supported myself other than my army pay by making spurs and bits and things like that, which fitted my training. And there was a man named James Vito McDowell. He was from Texas, and he was a cavalry captain, and he was stationed in New York City for some National Guard detached training for them. And he was quartered on Bedloe's Island, and he lived in the old wooden barracks there from World War One. Of course, this wasn't so much after World War One. It was 7 or 8 years, and as you know, from World War II, we have stuff all over the place. Well, anyway, I used to go to visit him and look at the statue in passing, and they kept telling me that it needed repairing, and that a certain lieutenant was in charge of it, and I should talk to him. So I did finally meet this lieutenant, and so he asked me what it would cost to get it repaired. And so I walked around the statue with him, and I said, well, I think I could do it for $1,500. So he went to see his immediate superior, and they arranged that I would get $1,500 for what repair work I thought the statue needed, and that I should be paid every 2 weeks as the thing progressed. So this lieutenant, whose name I wish I could remember, he went up to the public library in New York to look up contracts with the contractors. And he was a good student, or he was a funny-looking man. He had a big, long neck, and his uniform collar was much too big for his neck. And it looked as though he was trying to escape out of his uniform. And when he got excited, Adam's apple would go up and down. Anyway, there was nothing wrong with his character. He did what any sensible man would do. He drew up a contract. Now, there are many things in this contract that you would find in any contract, but one thing he put in there, that when I was finished with this work, I had to leave a broom clean, had to remove all debris, scaffolds, tools, et cetera, from the island, and then I would get my final payment of $250. In the meantime, I started to work there, and one of the first things I found was a tool chest, and I think we still have it. I'm not absolutely certain if this is the one, but anyway, we opened this tool chest, and here was exactly what we would need for our work. Oh boy, I was really glad, because if I were to bring my tools down, I would have to take them on this little steamboat they had that left from what was then the aquarium, what was down there, down the battery. And here are all the tools ready for me to go to work, except a few tools that I might need, some scaffolding material. So I went about my job and used these tools. For instance, this mallet with the long handle on it, where would I ever find such a thing? That was made for that job, no question about that. And I could be up on the scaffold, and I could hit that copper where I wanted and get it right back into place. The other mallet, I see I broke a piece off, and I can't remember this happening. But, want me to stop? Anyway. Okay. Anyway, when the job was completed, and I tried to get my payment of $250, he, in the meantime, didn't know anything about these French tools, and he wasn't interested. The fact that the contract says no tools, they left, take them away. Well, I needed that $250 pretty badly, and so I removed the tools. Then it began to bother me years later, and I tried to give them to the Smithsonian Institution. The people at the statue couldn't care less in those days. They just didn't know anything about it. They had no authority to accept tools, and many of them wrote. And more recently, a man by the name of McClanahan, who was the resident, what do you call him?
Superintendent.
A very nice man. We had some meetings about this, and he said, I have no authority in this matter. I said, let's get in touch with somebody who does. I'm getting old. I could die any day. Let's get rid of these tools to the people who rightfully own them. Well, I went down there a couple of times. There were some contractors working there. Because it was a roofing, sheet metal roofing contractor there. When was that work done? That was less than a good 10 years ago, wasn't it?
More than that.
Well, okay. I was young enough at that time. I'm not 80 yet, but I'm getting right there. I was young enough at that time to go up on the scaffold. They have a steel scaffold around the statue, and I was able to climb around and see what they were trying to do. And in their own way, they were doing it pretty good. And in the meantime, McClanahan got transferred someplace, and we tried to give him the Library of Congress, Smithsonian, and we wrote to your department. And we couldn't get any results. Well, I'm getting old. I don't want this on my mind. I think it's a great thing. And Reader's Digest is going to do a story on it for you and for me. And I would be delighted to turn these over to you. Now, what do I want for doing this all these years? I want zero. I don't want any money at all. But I want people to know that I am the man that rebuilt that thing. Now, what I did to it, really, I'm a very good climber. I went to sea, and I learned how to sit in a bosun stand right up in the air. One thing about that statue, the wind had to be exactly right. Otherwise, you'd be hanging over 42nd Street instead of the battery if the wind was coming up the harbor. I had taglines to pull myself back. That's a pretty windy spot there, And the biggest problem with the statue at that time was looseness. Stuff had worked its way loose, and it was leaking. And it leaked buckets of water, which they proceeded to clean up in a very old-fashioned way. They used a scoop shovel and failed. And way down at the bottom, where the statue was anchored onto the masonry, that's where you had the water. And you can stop leaks. You don't need a lot of caulking compounds in all cases, but you can peen the metal so the two parts kiss each other, and it won't admit any water. Well, there were some sheets that seemed to be loose, rivets gone, and so forth. I fixed all that up, and I don't think we used more than two new sheets. We use this piece of wood here, and that's called a Bible. And that thing is that sheet metal in that. You see that? That's the thing you take out on the job. And I use that Bible to bend the flashing that I use down there. That's a French thing. And that's common all over the world, a Bible. So that's just a trade name for it. Now, about the Soma, that's the whole story of the thing.
I think I like your speculation on the fact that the tools, and you really feel were left by the 1886.
Well, now, finding these tools in the base of the statue, certainly they're not of American make, as near as I can see, and there's too broad a variety of them for any one man to have, and the French always did do a lot more with tools than any other group of people. French and Germans were great tool men. They would invest in tools to accomplish their work. Well, the tools were certainly there when we went to do our work, and they are certainly not my property. And I've tried now for 55 years to give them back to somebody, and I'm so pleased that you people came to see me today, and we are going to get these out of here. Of course, at my age, you've got to get ready for your departure from this wonderful scene, and tidy up everything, and so this will take one thing off my mind, and we'll all get together some way to deliver them to you down there. And certainly the tools were a great help to me as I did the work. And as we worked around the statue, we used four sides, like 12 o'clock, 3 o'clock, 6 o'clock, and 9 o'clock. Now, 9 o'clock and 3 o'clock were the east and west side. And this is how we planned our work. And we were intelligent enough to take pictures of the statue. And I believe we had some of them blown up. And then we circled on the photographs where we wanted to make these repairs. Now, I think you should want to know what indicated a repair was to be made. Number one, if anything was loose or rattling, we had to tighten up. And two, we had to look for leaks. Leaks are very easy to find. We have pictures here we can show you where it's been leaking. But we worked up one side of the statue. We used ropes and a boatman's chair. And it was a little hairy at times, but I was an old sailor by that time, young man, but an old sailor. And that's an interesting thing. I went to sea with a captain who lived just around the corner from me. He lived directly between where the future Mrs. Lynch lived and where I lived, right in the middle. And his name was Captain Spencer. And that was the first ship, that one up there. And I spent as many days up in the rigging as I did on deck, I think, because we were repairing this old wooden ship all the time. And I followed him on steamships and so forth. But sitting in a boat's chair and working was no new experience for me. And ropes and so forth. I don't know. Oh, to the statue. We threw a band around it up high up, a rope.
Really, it's what we call in mountain climbing, rappelling.
Exactly. Except that most of the time I sat on a boatman's chair, which is a flat piece of wood with a rope coming up out of each side of it. That thing was used, the boatswain chair was used mostly for inspection and for caulking. Because if you pushed against the statue, the thing went back. But I did have two tag lines, that big rope about the size of my finger, 3/4 inch line, to snug me in. And I had two men helping me. One man, I can't remember, he was a fairly good mechanic. He was a German. The other man was a man named Jack Amy, and we used to call him the gopher, because he had a gopher everything. And here's your man up in Boston, there's your job. Mr. McManus did that. That's right. Well, it was a good picture. And that man that took those pictures was all right. And there's how what a man is made. And here's the old ship, you say, of the sail plan. And but I'm going to show you somewhere it's in here. We make so many different weather vanes, it's hard to count. This work went on, I think, for 18 months. We didn't have that many good days, you know. And then some days it's bitter cold down there. And you just can't work on that island when it's that cold. Because you have heat and everything now. To say that. Yeah, I say something I don't know anything about. But, Patty, I'm not finding what I want. Find the picture. It took a seaman and a metal worker to do this real well. Somebody didn't want it to do it. And sometimes we would go 2-3 weeks we couldn't go on the steps in the bitter cold weather. I think the whole thing took about a year and a half. I'm just guessing that. In fact, I can't even tell you the, I can't tell you what I'm starting.
This included the head and the arm, did it?
Well, let me say that the statue had been worked on by others. There was a sculptor named Borgland. And he worked on the light that's up there around the torch. Something like that. And he designed that, and they said, oh, yeah, that's what you want. And this is what they call a lifeboat. They said, if you're a quick reader, you can read that. Read it out loud, this one. We ran the rope around the base of the statue, a very long rope, which a couple hundred feet long, of course. What's the diameter of the base of the statue, do you know? Well, 3 times that diameter gives you the length of the rope that you need to give you the circumference. I remember we put a bowline in the end line, past the elbow through, and we kept flipping it up till we got up high enough so that we could use it as a means of hoisting, and we made it fast up there. I do not remember any place but one place where we could get out and stack one on the face of the figure. We rigged up scaffolds on the inside, of course. And when I was working on the outside, this other man, whose name I can't remember, he was working on the inside. But when you set rivets, it takes 2 men. And 1 man has to bucket and the other man a hammer. And if my memory is right, I did the bucking on the outside and they did the hammering from the inside. And then, of course, after the rivet is set, and you have to work on the copper to make one piece of copper kiss the other piece. This has to be real good, a man of integrity.
What
does kiss?
Kiss. Overlap.
Overlap,
right?
Overlap.
And then, that tool, Patty, there's a tool there that's called a goat's foot, right in front of you. There you go, that's it. And that. It's called a goat's foot. And that's the exact type of tool that you use on the copper. This does not go on the rivet. Now, the riveting tool has a little round hole in it. But this tool, obviously, the handle's gone. Well, this is the tool. You held this against the copper. There was a wooden handle in this. And you held that handle, held that against the copper, and you hit this with another hammer. And that's what brought the copper down. That's what made the copper kiss each other, so that it wouldn't leak. Leaking was a big problem, and any coppersmith could do this, you know. There's no name on this. I wish there was some names on this. There's a 108 or something on it. Is that kilogram? Here's a magnifying glass. Anyway, whether it was that tool or one like it, I see another stamp.
Thank you.
first tools the hell out of them. And it was ACIA, which means steel, A-C-I-A, Pondu, which means cast. Now, you could cast a blank like this, and then hammer it the way this was done. That was the beauty of cast steel, and you could harden it. Now, this tool has been hardened in this amber, it's soft underneath, and see if it peened over here. And, these are probably a weight. But most of them you see on the ACIA fondue, the French were great for that. They love that. But you could cast the basic shape and then hammer out the rest of it. Now, let us say this. So anyway, we rigged up ropes and 4x4s. All the lumber was on the island already. We didn't bring any lumber over there. But there was quite an installation. Are there any pictures of that island as it was after World War I?
Yeah. Pictures when there were still barracks on the island. And there were still horses. And then we have quite a number around World War II. But I wouldn't be able to tell you.
I can tell you. You show me the pictures. I forgot the barracks and everything, but sure. You have pictures of a steamboat these close.
Yeah.
That'd be interesting. It was black and white. And then
we have pictures of Hazen.
Yeah, I think so.
How long ago did the hills go back?
I think so.
Did you know Aaron Hill?
So anyway, the problem was resetting the rivets and hammering down the edges where they would admit water. Because you want as little caulking as possible. Now, when we're through with this tape, I'm going to pull these pictures out and divide them with you. And I've made overlays so that you can understand what the pictures are. Now we have two sets of pictures here. One set of pictures is of the model, which is at the Museum of Arts and Trades in Paris. And I have the negatives of those, and you may have whatever glosses you want. Now that little model is very important. And to me, of course, because the man made that model for the museum. He worked on the statue the entire time. And my man in Montreal is a Frenchman, Parisian, and he was on the phone last night. And he could write to them for us. And they're very difficult to get letters from. But he was able to do this. It took me almost a year to get the photographs. There were hundreds of letters going over there. They finally did it. I think the photographs cost us a few $100. They charged us a big bunch of money for it. But anyway, I'm going to share those with you. And I'll point out to the tools. You'll see tools like this right in these pictures. So this man who made these models is pretty good. Now the other pictures I've got there are pictures of the existing statue. Then, of course, you people know about the group of photographs, I'm sure. What's the name of the firm in New York City that does this? And we think so much of the statues that we buy these by the hundreds of them. Now we give them away to people. And we're always doing something here. Always doing something like that here. It's a way to make yourself famous.
A woman came here with a weatherman one day. Oh, it was a crummy looking pair of a horse. And it was all beaten up and so forth. It was a cheap reproduction made in Taiwan. So she wanted us to repair it. But she wouldn't entrust it to us. In our absence, we had to work on it every day while she stood over. So we sent her away.
The eye of the beholder.
Yeah.
don't know what we do without you.
Now, suppose we work on these photographs all the way over past that point. Now, we'll come to that this last. Incidentally, read this.
Oh, yes, we have one of these, don't we? Or we did have, but it was stolen. Is this the one that was stolen? Yes.
I'll get one back from the Boyces. Not too bad. Dr. Boyce was the doctor that took care of Mrs. Winchester's cancer operation. He took care of her for some years. And very successfully so, by the way, she's still living. And we made that thing for potato with his kids, you know, and so forth. Now, this is a picture of the model in Paris. I'll give you one each of the other things. Now, this model exists. It's about 7 or 8 feet tall, about 1 meter square, 3 feet square. And these are little mannequins, you know. Now, here they're hammering copper, and the copper sheet has holes in the side. And these are iron hooks holding the copper down. And they made these weights in an old tea kettle, as you can see, made out of lead. And the tea kettle's on one of the shelves here somewhere. And that held the copper down while they hammered on it. And they were great users of these little horses all the time. If you look carefully there, you'll see little horses in the picture. They like these things over here. Now, and they use horses, rope, and then these irons are what you use for reinforcing the inside. This is a gas arrangement, and they use a torch to heat the copper. And these pressure members were to hold the copper down so it didn't spring back. Now we have...
One man is instructed holding that down.
That's right. Give it a little more pressure, Joe, or something like that.
This model is where now, in Paris?
Oh, yes, it's in Paris. That's in their most important museum. Now, here's an overlay for that. And I can give you these. And then this is all explained here. You see, we did this here. Now, I would think that would be important to you.
Yes.
Okay. And so we give you this and this. Prince of the right.
Let's see. T and
all right, that would be a B. It should be down here somewhere. Where is B?
Oh, here's the overlay.
Yeah, there.
There we are.
All
right. B, all right.
Right there.
And that T anvil was one of the tools that you have.
Similar, yeah. I'll tell you what, there it is with a point sticking up. It's the one that we have here, like that. No. Let Mr. McKinney. Look at me, Mr. McKinney. Look at me. Look at my finger now. Right between the two tall things that are standing out. Made with the cheeks on the side. Put her right up here. You can't hurt this desk. This is made for this. See how this is made with it, with the cheeks on the side there? And that's a typical French design, of course. Only a Frenchman would go to that trouble to get it like that. Are there any markings on it?
This is the T anvil we're looking at.
One of the T anvils, but this is a handmade piece, you know. Probably made by a forger in Paris. Okay, we'll put it down for you. Stronger. We have identified the material and ask what questions you will while it's in front of it, then we'll look at another sheet. And Oh, yeah, keep it right together. All right, now we'll put this to one side. Now, this one is of great interest to me because of one thing. Something in the way here. Oh, this is a ball anvil. And I have many ball anvils that I use in my trade of hammering out horses and statues and so forth. But no, I've never seen them in many shops in America. You see them in Europe. And I must have 30 or 40 ball anvils of different sizes. Now this one also is all laid out for you, see? Mm-hmm. And I will see that you get copies of this material. And it also acted as a ladder. But you'll find ladders all over the places. One, two, three. That's only three ladders in this picture. Here's some more showing up here.
Three, four.
Anyway, I would say, yes, it was two or three stories. But armed with what little research I do, and when you go to Paris, you can scoot around and catch more. Now, let's take these pictures here. These are the pictures that I had them take in Paris, and my little museum here is called the Craft Center Museum. I don't know. Will you fix that? Yeah, fix it back in 1 minute. Let's see it right away. I wanted to find you gentlemen so eager to see this material because this
brand new to me.
You know, the Holy Grail, the Church of the Holy Grail, is nothing compared to what I've done with these tools. Now, these are pictures. Now, there's the ones you had the big one of and so forth, right? And I guess that's the other one that we had enlarged, you see. Now, I can give you prints of these because I have the negatives. And you can look at these, they're numbered from every angle, you see. Just four? Oh, yeah, that should be. This business of being one-handed is a nuisance. Now, you see these things here? Those are rough molds they use to check the shape of the sheets, and they cut that out of wood. You see that?
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah. Oh, well, I'll give you a
print. These are called Gabawi, aren't they?
That's right.
Yeah.
The real name for that in an armature. And here's your friend, see? Now you'll see this there in Paris. Isn't that something? Here's all the ladders, you see. I was very much interested in all the little horses they had, and I don't see them this morning. There's a head being assembled, you see. I don't see so many little horses this morning. I have a collection of horses, little wooden horses like those over there. Those are from the island, those horses over there, of course. Now, you see how the men did it and all the ropes holding it down, spring it into position. Is there a collection of photographs of them assembling this end of this island?
We have some wood engravings. There were wood engravings done at the time. Not many.
They had to do a lot. Once you take this thing apart, some of the sheets bulge out, have to knock them back in again. Persuader. There's a name for those big mallets. I think they're called commanders in English. Now, so those are the pictures we have. Now, I think these are different sizes of the same. Now, if you were to tell me what you want, we'll see if we'll get you get it. The Statue of Liberty photos open now, please. Pictures out of the
same
picture.
The same, yeah. Well,
now, pictures you have, one through, how many are there, Pat?
Ten.
You got them right. Count them out, somebody. Make sure they're in sequence. Hey, you want these numbers from the back, don't you?
The inventory.
Yeah.
Well,
I'd make a record of it. Want me to do it for you?
We'll do that.
Well, you're not going to have these.
I'm just going to copy them.
Oh, fine.
Yeah.
And the name of the museum, of course, is Arts et Métiers, which means
trade.
Mr. Lynch, what do you think the significance of the tools are? Say, if we were to create an exhibit, what would you like people to know or to get out of it?
Well, I think that's a good question. Now, people have no idea how this statue was made. They think it was cast into a mold or something, and they don't realize that there are men in the world who did hammer things out, such as this and that statue, and this art became refined about the time the Statue of Liberty was done, because they were building steamships at that time, and they wanted lots of art and decoration in the steamship, and if you put heavy castings in, it made the ship that much more you had to propel through the water. So all of the places where weight meant anything, the repoussé work was used. And we are the last ones doing it, you see. All that ornament, which looks like stone, but it's really metal. And we can give you a catalog of ours showing that those pieces that look like stone, but they're actually metal. I'll get that photo here. Put a 7474 in the dumbwaiter, please.
Okay.
So, that trade is a vanished trade. It's gone. You're looking at the last man. Except in Paris, we have two men. We all know each other, of course. And, you see, the French buildings could only go up, I think, 3 stories originally. They only go 3 stories high because the stone was so heavy it would make the building sink into the ground. The soil has certain strength to it. And it would, if you put all stonework up 4 stories, most of the soil in Paris wouldn't take it. So the final story was done of metal like this. And see, these things were all originally done in stone, especially these corbels and things like this. And now what do? We make them in metal. By the ripple, say, there's some, there you are. See, that looks just like stone. You can take this with you.
Thank you.
And so the ripple say, oh, it was a big thing. And in the front of this book of mine, I wrote that you should read that about rope drop stamping. You know? Maybe stamping is the wrong word. It's really ripple say word. Because after you do it, after you hammer it, then you have to tool it up a little bit so it looks real good.
How would you approach, suggest we deal with people who are visiting the statue and viewing these tools on display in terms of their tour of the Statue of Liberty?
All right. If I were you, I would act pretty quick while I'm still alive and still able to explain these things to you. And I would get that in my files. I'd show you all my personal tools. Patty, open that case with the tools that we just polished and put them right in front of us here. Let me get this out of the way. Now, you'll have to... That's it. Lay those right. There's something underneath that making it fall. Oh, that's gone. I think that's called a goat's foot. I'm not sure that. However, what I would do, I would plan, get the history of the repoussé thing right down. And I'm going to show you now some tools. Years ago, this will kind of date me. Give me that little anvil behind you there. See or so? To make models of tools, and so that you could exhibit your tools. And I made these when I was about 24 years old, and it's part of a big exhibition that I had, and you'll see some interesting things here. We went to great extent. Here's a hammer made of a little bird with a stone. I'll put it down there. Well, the whole thing was that comes out too. That's called a sow block. And the other thing's gonna be dropped right in the hole there. How was that? Spent a lot. Where is there another bag of small tools? Yeah. That's supposed to fit on that black thing that's over there. And that, there's a hole in the wood. Now what I would do, if I were you and wanted to tell the story, I would get a hold of some repoussé tools, which we'll help you with. There's no question about that. And we'll make a half-inch piece of repoussé work so they can see what happened, how it developed. And this is square. They had everything had to be a little touch of art. Well, the French were great for this. I made these. I don't like that little saw. Isn't that pretty? Yeah, well, I know that's all done by hand. What did you say? These are repoussé tools. This is what you use for small repoussé work. Not real small, like silverware, but this would be for iron and copper. Now, the tools used for this statue, were many times that size, you can see by the scale of them over here. But what Bartholdi had to do was to model a statue first, and which he did only about 1 meter tall, I believe. And then you have an enlarging machine. You put points on it, you can enlarge it, let's say, 5 times. And then you refine that line, but then you enlarge that 5 times more. So the next thing you know, you've got this thing up to the size you want. And that's what you see in those pictures. Now, what they did, they made a wood armature and a smooth plaster over. And then Bartholdi had a check at looking at it and see if it looked right. The fingers looked like fingers instead of a hand of bananas or something like that. And the net result would be that they would have this enlargement of the little thing. The head itself took up almost the whole building there, as you can see from these pictures. And there's one little box missing. Now these are chasing rooms. This is a scribe I used to scribe lines on. There's a typical chasing tool for copper and silver. You see, we have even much smaller than this. And then we have great big ones. So big here. There's one with a ball on the end of it. You see that? Right on the floor there? That's right. That's the same thing, only bigger, you see. Now, to get back to your question, I would create an exhibit, and I think I'd put up a piece of a steel scaffold, and which we were glad to give to you, and have a mannequin up there, and a sheet, partly formed, which is no big deal to do this sort of thing. And that mannequin can have that big hammer in his hand. And I would think, the last time I was down there, and this is when Mr. McClanahan was there, they had little vignettes on the wall. The people going by, 15,000 people a day, can't see anything from that. They're too small. I think they need something big in scale. And it would be no problem to do this while I'm still alive. And I'm not going to do it with my own hands, but I've got men that I can make do it just right, you know.
If we were to use this mannequin with the tools, would we be recreating a scene of the original fabrication of the statue?
I think so, yeah. And we would be inspired by what we see in these pictures. And let's not try to do something extraordinary with 21st century tools, right? And just do it the way it was done.
So these tools would be representative of the types of tools used in...
Exactly. And the thing that you don't see here, we use a great many wooden tools. And these wooden tools were perishable. They were called perishable tools. And when you're through using them, they use them to heat the place with. And... But you would take a tool, take a piece of oak, 4x4 oak, and fix the end of it, and then drive that onto the copper. And the oak is hard, but it's not as hard as the copper. So the oak would push it down to place. And if you want to change a little bit, you could grind it or saw on it, do whatever you wanted to. And I would think that if the people saw this, and we rigged up some workbenches or something, they would get a better understanding of how this is done. Because everybody I've ever met, they think the statue was cast, and it wasn't. It was replicate hand hammered. And of course, it's the biggest thing like that that I've ever seen. And none of the other statues come anywhere near. What is it? Is it 200 feet high? 153? How about that? That's a big statue. And so this repoussé work is extremely important. And so they get the idea of what it's all about. Next.
You discovered these tools in the statue. Where did you discover them? And in the process, did you find any other evidence of the workmen? Maybe graffiti or initials?
No,
or
I can't remember. I might have been conscious to see that, but I can't remember that at all. Today I would be more conscious of it because of the condition in the subways and so forth. And Kilroy was here in World War II and so on. But I can't remember that. Maybe some workmen, Americans, might have put something down. The French aren't so keen to mark things up. As a matter matter of fact, I got a great shock last time I was in Paris. I went back to my old school called the Beaux-Arts, and there's a statue there in plaster of Pelou. The word Pelou means hairy, and the French soldiers were called the hairy ones because they couldn't shave, grew beards and mustaches. And this is a statue done by Bourdel. He was Rodin's favorite pupil, Bourdel was. And here are this wonderful statue there. And these modern young men of the school had decorated his face with various designs and on his uniform, put medals on him and so forth. Now, that wasn't the French of 50 years ago. The Americans might have done it, but not the French. I doubt if these Frenchmen would have put their names in it. I never noticed it, but I wasn't looking for anything like that. The tools we came, I think the first tool I found was that big mallet, and which was perfect for what I wanted to do. Well, if there's one, there's got to be more, you see.
What was your thought when you stumbled across the mallet? Do you recall?
Nice of them to leave it there for me. And thank you, Frenchie. And I think that
no possibility either.
This is these were left from the Gutzon-Borglum effort.
No. These aren't American type tools.
Yeah.
That's a different thing.
Yeah.
You take this big tool, little way right in front of the suitcase there. The big one. Right in front of your feet.
Oh, this
one. No, look at me. They do everything with a look at my finger. Yeah, that's it.
Anvil.
Yeah, now,
right.
Who else would have a thing like that except a man that was going to do something awful big like this, you see? And you understand how these tools are used. I'm trying to get a picture of me here. Well, we can get pictures for you from but we'd like to have some more.
Oh, wait
Mike.
A minute. We're going to do this.
Well, we like a record.
All right. Well, this business of being an active working smith all these years, you get to be kind of the boss man of the whole world on it. You got all right? Fine. We gave you pictures of those tools, but enjoy yourself, take what you want. Right. Why don't you ask some questions?
I guess what I'm trying to get at are some of the maybe personal reminiscences you might have of your days on the statue. Maybe any thoughts that stories that some of the artifacts they might be able to portray. Any thoughts you?
I didn't know too much about the statue. I was interested in it like any other American would be. And I had visited the statue with my father when I was a little boy, and he explained to me what the statue meant in the harbor, and he had it exactly right, and I felt that the statue was a friend of mine, and never thinking that it would become this important for me having worked on it, but at that time, it was just a fun thing to do because I could go down there and work and then spend the evening with my friend Captain McDowell. The last boat was at 11:30 at night, and so we'd spend an evening and I'd grab the last boat, and I was living in a place called Tudor City in New York City at that time, right off the street from Grand Central, you know, and so I could leave McDowell and get a subway down there at the Battery and be home in 10-15 minutes. And we spent a lot of time together, and McDowell was an especially fine man, because he was very young at that time, so was I. But he enjoyed seeing me work, and I enjoyed working on it, but I had no great ideas about its importance at that time. When I did find these tools, and I do remember a big box full of the smaller stuff. We were making jokes. We tried to drag the box out where we could see it. It's pretty dark down there in the basement, as you know, unless you've added a lot of windows or something, but it was pretty dark, and we couldn't hardly move this box. It was so heavy. They used equipment, of course, to move it, some kind of a hoist. And I'm not sure if we have that box or not, but we have one that makes me think it's it. But you would get about 1/4 of these tools in a box. It's a good-sized box, but I would think if you loaded it with these tools and tried to pick it, it would break apart. It's made out of wood that thick. And I'm not at all sure that's the box. However, we can look at that and decide at a later date. However, these tools were unearthed. And in those days, the basement wasn't used by visitors, I don't think. It was more of a rubbish storage place. They had, you know, these stanchions they put to keep the crowds back. There were old stanchions down there, and a lot of broken furniture. And the basement was not used, I suppose, used today. Did they come in at the bottom level now? Well, I think they came in at a higher level. It was an intermediate deck. I sort of remember that being made of cement or stone or something. And I do remember that we started out by checking the anchors. I can remember those anchors. I could draw them for you. And they were sound. There was nothing left to be done to the anchors. They were good and fast. Into the granite. And incidentally, the granite for the face came from Connecticut. That's right. And our family probably made the tools to cut the granite. And this one quarry called Cherry Creek, I think it is. I'll get you the right name. It's up here in Guilford or Brantford. They had 40 blacksmiths working there, making chisels. It was that big at one time. And a man who's still living remembers when there were 100 men on the face of the granite seam, all drilling by hand. This is before the days of the air compressor and the fresh air tools. And the blacksmiths had to sharpen these every day. I imagine they must have had 400 or 500 men working there all the time. I can't remember the name of that quarry. In any event, we determined that the statue was held properly because if we had repaired it without checking the anchors, well, they could move again and break loose from what we did. Copper, when hot, let's say hot enough to melt, and then it gets cold, shrinks 3/16 of an inch to the lineal foot. Now, when the hot sun gets on the statue, and that statue gets very hot, I can tell you, you can't touch it sometimes, it's got that hot. When the hot sun gets on, that statue has to expand. And the north side would not expand as much as the south side. There might be a difference of let's say 6 or 8 inches. So the statue is moving all the time. Can you hear it anymore? Does the statue make noise? That's what I thought. And it did when I was down there. Mostly from the wind, I felt at the time. And you can almost feel the thing moving a little bit. You have that. Oh, yeah. Well, the thing that we were worried about was the thumb. There was a little ladder in the thumb. Is it still there?
Thumb holding the book for the thumb.
Thumb and the torch. There used to be a little ladder in it. And I don't think it was a steel ladder. It may have been, I can't remember now, but I know there was a little ladder up there, only about so wide. And we made a repair up there of some kind. Of course, you know, with these repairs, you start at the bottom and go up. But the stuff laps like shingles. And
do you have the whole face of the statue, every inch of the statue?
Well, no. For $1,500 we did. what we could do. But we were conscientious about it, this is for sure. Oh, yeah. Well, once you're up in the air, you might as well do it. The big job is getting up there. Once you've got that rope up around the neck or some other place, and you got some guys on the ground that's going to help hoist you up, you might as well look at everything while you're there. And I was that kind of a person, I still am. I would want to know if there's anything bad up there. I cannot remember finding anything that was real sick about the fact. It was all real good. The one thing that impressed me was Eiffel, you know, the man that did the interior, he did the Eiffel Tower, of course. He knew what he was doing. And he had these blacksmiths making those ribs, which I've got photographs of somewhere here. And have you ever studied those little ribs that are inside the statue? Stuff about that wide, about that thick. Well, they used a bending force, and this is something I would furnish to them. They used bending force, and that iron was heated and bent very accurately to fit the copper. Have you ever studied that? Well, let me say this. Are there any pictures here of the interior of the statue that we took? Not pictures that you've seen before. This is all that stuff. Here you are. Now, I particularly wanted to get these pictures. You see how carefully all this is bent? See how that one's bent in there? We've got the whole side out for you. This is all very carefully done by the blacksmiths in France. And we checked it all out. These things written on here, I don't know who did that stuff on there, but all this was done by the Frenchman, and somebody electric welded that. You see that there? This probably couldn't have been put in since my time there. Yeah, that's right. You see how it overlaid like that? Exactly. It's like shingles in a building.
The bottom.
Yeah. Now, this is all repoussé work up here. This is up in the top part. So these irons here are very important to the whole statue because an Eiffel laid all that out. See how that followed that copper? Now, I think what I should do, if you go ahead with this thing, I'll get some iron and I'll bend it up for you like that so they can see how that supports were made and give you the tools for doing it. Now, see, this shows it all overlaid. You see that? Look at that mass of iron in there. There might have been a little iron put in by somebody else since then, but what those fellows did was pretty good. Look at how carefully this iron follows this copper. And it supports it perfectly. See that? This is no easy job to get. The copper was hammered first, and then the iron's made to fit the copper. The iron is actually the structural armature today. See all these pieces here? That was a monumental task for the blacksmith. And I think you should have that in your attention. And someone I'll teach you to get prints of these, by the way. And make sure Mr. Clampton sends a prints of that. And I think that someone who's going to lay this whole thing out should get together with me, and the best time to do it would be while Mr. Crowell is here. He's been my associate. He's a designer and a draftsman, and he's been with me, I think, 51 years. At my house, and we're arranging an exhibit for our museum of ship models, half models, and he carved them all himself, but he could draw up an exhibit, how we saw it at a meeting, he would sketch that right up for him. And I would think, of course I haven't been to the island in so many years, I don't remember how the new entranceway works. But I think if we have something, how the statue is made, something about Bartoli, the people, I've talked to people who have seen it, and they don't even remember the exterior, that's all. They don't remember the interior. And the inside of the statue, to me, is very important, because the fact that it is all repoussé and is all held by these iron straps. And it took a bit of genius, you know. If it was so, I think you've got about 18 feet, haven't you, in there, ceiling height?
I think less than that now, because we have lower ceilings because of the air conditioning.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
So I think one of our considerations, we put it in space, but nonetheless, something that we
Well, once we have that information,